This podcast is part of the Acast Creator Network.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello and welcome to The Stand with Eamon Dunphy. Now, last week in the Irish Times, because there's no football happening in the Irish Times and indeed in the Sunday Times, Graeme Souness talked in the Sunday Times about his time in Italy, and in the Irish Times they began to speculate on the greatest Irish team ever. And in the greatest Irish team ever, the midfield was John Giles, Roy Keane and Liam Brady. And I was thinking about that during the last few days, and I have to say, I couldn't think of a better midfield anywhere in the world in history almost than those three players. Another thing that I saw recently was recommended to me by Liam Brady. It was a fabulous documentary about Diego Maradona and his time in Italy, where he played for Napoli. Napoli were a Cinderella club, really, from the south, the poor, impoverished south of Italy. And with Maradona leading them, they went and won Serie A and were very successful, also in Europe. But of course, that all ended in tragedy. One thing that didn't end in tragedy was Liam Brady's spell in Italy. He went there in, I think, 1981. And he joins me now to talk about the great players that he played against, them, among them Maradona. Liam, you went there from Arsenal. Was it 1980, 81?
It was 80, Eamon, 1980. We lost the cup final to West Ham in 1980 and also a European Cup Winners Cup final, yes, against Valencia on penalties when I missed one of the penalties. So it wasn't the best send-off that I wanted. But I went to Juventus, yeah.
Yeah, before I ask you about the players and the culture in Italy, that midfield of you, John, and Roy would have been something else, wouldn't it? There'd be no wimps anyway.
No, well, there was, a lot of passing ability, and probably I would have been the player who played more offensive than the other two, you know. I probably would have been the one that's getting up around the edge of the box. And you've got Keane's box to box, and you've got Giles running the show with picking the ball up from the back and starting moves off, a bit like a quarterback in American football. Yeah, it would have been interesting. Yeah. I might have got on with him then. Roy, I mean.
I wonder who would have been the boss, but never mind, we won't go there.
It certainly wasn't going to be me anyway.
When you went to Italy, it was really a golden age for Italian football. They won the World Cup in 1982, of course, but it was the place to go for many of the great players of the world. Zico, the great Brazilian, Maradona later in the 80s. But they had, and the Juventus team you went to join had some wonderful players, Tardelli, Marco Tardelli, who, of course, was to come to Ireland with Giovanni Trapattoni. Now, Trapattoni was the coach when you joined.
That's right, Aaron, yeah. I joined the team that they hadn't won the league. They'd won the league, I think, in 78. I think Inter won it in, I think Juventus won the league in 77. They hadn't won 78, 79. There were other teams that won it. I think Inter won it in 70. No, Inter won it in 79, 80. So Juventus hadn't won it in a couple of years, but they had some brilliant players, as you mentioned. Seven, I think there were seven Juventus players in the Italian squad that won the 82 yes. World Cup. And six of them were in the starting team. And if my memory serves me right, Dino Zoff was the goalkeeper. Gentile was one of the defenders. Cabrini was one of the defenders. Tardelli was in midfield. Rossi was up front. And Calzio, I think, came on and played in the final. So it was a team with really great Italian players.
Yeah, Roberto Bezzecca.
Yeah, he was injured for that 82. He would have been the centre forward in that team, but he was injured and he couldn't go to the World Cup. So that was a big blow for Italy, but they overcame it. If you remember, they had a poor start. I think they drew all three of their group games, and people in Italy, particularly the media, were screaming, "Come home, you're a disgrace." And they went on to win it with Rossi really coming on fire. He didn't score in those first three games, and then he scored, I think, two against Argentina, then three against Brazil, and then one in the final. Yes. So he scored six goals in three games, Paolo. I played with him in my second year at Juventus.
Yeah, the Juventus team you played in was, I mean, Tardelli scored the killer goal, didn't he, against Brazil? There's that wonderful celebration.
It was 1-1 and he scored it to put them 2-1, and then Altobelli got the third goal in the last 5 minutes. And they really were great. And they beat the best, probably, Brazilian team that I've ever seen. You know, I didn't see, I obviously saw the 70 World Cup team, Brazil, win. But, I was only 14 then. So, I wouldn't have been able to compare like for like. But certainly the Brazilian team in 82 was fantastic. And a lot of those players, I was just looking at it yesterday, preparing for the podcast, a lot of those players ended up coming to Italy. You got Junior, Falcao, Socrates came and played for Fiorentina. Falcao was at Roma. Cerezo came and played with Roma with Falcao a bit later on than Falcao. And, of course, you mentioned him earlier on, Zico, who was an unbelievable footballer. He went to Udinese, which really was an unfashionable team to go to. And I think if Zico had gone to one of the big teams that were in the running to win league titles and so forth, I think he would have been an even bigger name in Italy. He was absolutely fantastic. And I think Graham Souness is, I wouldn't say spot on for Maradona. For me, Maradona would have been the best in my time there, but Zico wasn't far behind, or nor was Platini.
Yes, and Graham reflecting last week in the Sunday Times about his time in Italy. Of course, Graham went to Sampdoria. He said Zico was the best he ever played against. I'd like to go back, though, to Rossi, Liam, because goals were so precious in the Italian game. And he was a great goal scorer. He wasn't a big, Liam, was he? He's quick.
No, he was a poacher, Eamon. He was like a Lineker. He was a bit smaller than Gary Lineker, but he was electric in and around the box. He scored nearly all of his goals in the box. He was great at getting to the near post before the defenders. Little dummy runs in the box, and he could link up. He could get in on 1-2s and things like that. Very intelligent player. A real goal poacher, really, really good player.
Going into that team, Liam, at that stage when you went in 1980, I think Italian clubs were only allowed one foreign player.
Well, that's right. I mean, if I could give you a bit of background to that, can I?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, well, in 1966, Italy got knocked out by North Korea in the World Cup here in England. And it was a, you know, disgrace. And there was an awful lot of foreigners playing in the Italian league at the time. And they kind of said, well, these foreigners are stopping our own players, our homegrown players, from being developed. And a bit like that debate has been in England in recent years.
Yes.
So many foreign players playing in the Premier League. So they decided to shut the borders down, no more foreign players until 1980. The foreign players that were in Italy then in 66 could stay, but they couldn't bring in anyone else. So
right.
They opened up the borders in 1980. I went to Juventus. Falcao went to Roma. Herbert Prohaska, a very good Austrian player, went to Inter Milan. Rudy Kroll, the great Dutch defender, went
yes.
to Napoli, and it began to grow from there. And after 2 years, they allowed another foreign player to come in, so every team could have two players, and that was up till about 88, 89. And there's a real correlation there. I mean, if you get the best players around the world and you put them in a team with very good Italian players, you're going to be successful. And the Italian teams began to make inroads in the European Cup, as it was then, and then the Champions League going forward.
Yes, and of course it produced that great AC Milan team that, you know, was unforgettable, really. It was an amazing team. That was after your time in Italy, but...
It was a little bit after my time, but I knew the players. I'd played against the players... When AC Milan
yeah.
changed owner and the infamous Silvio Berlusconi took over,
yeah.
he splashed the cash, Eamon, on initially on Hullet and Van Basten, not bad for starters,
no.
and then you got Rijkaard a year later. So that really was the basis of a great Milan team, and as you say, you probably wouldn't see the like of it again. Sacchi was the manager, and they had Baresi at the back, Maldini at the back, Costa Curt at the back, Ancelotti, who's now manager of Everton, great lad, great player, a bit
yeah.
like a Souness kind of player.
Yes.
And then you add those three Dutch guys with them, and well, bingo, you've got what it takes to win everything.
Yes, probably, well, one of the greatest teams in the history of the game. Really, when you went to Juventus, Liam, the culture was, a lot of English players, or quite a few English players, had gone over the years. They'd usually not adapted to the way of life, the culture, to learn the language. But you and your wife Sarah learned the language. You seemed to love the culture there. How difficult was it to learn the language?
It was quite difficult because I didn't really know I was going to Italy till very late on. I thought I might be moving to Germany and to Bayern Munich, but that didn't materialize. And it was only late on, probably when I started back pre-season training at Arsenal in 1980. So you're talking about early July, that I knew that the move to Juventus was going to happen, and I didn't prepare in any way. So it was quite hard. What we did is we got a personal tutor, and she was very, very helpful. And I reckon that after about 4 or 5 months, I could understand more or less what was being said to me. And
yes.
then probably after a year, I was speaking quite well.
How important was that to your football, to being part of the team in a real meaningful sense?
Well, I wanted to make it work, Eamon. It was my choice to leave Arsenal.
Yes.
You know, some players leave, and I'll probably go on to talk a bit about the British players that came to Italy along the line. And some of them, the clubs couldn't refuse the money they were offered. So
yeah.
they told their player, look, we're going to sell you. And it was usually quite lucrative to the player to move. But in their probably hearts and minds, they didn't really want to go. And I'm kind of thinking of somebody like Paul Gascoigne or maybe Ian Rush.
Yes.
See, they were different to me in as much as that they were probably happy where they were. They were winning things. Gazza was playing for somebody very happy at Spurs. And he probably didn't want to go, but I wanted to go. I wanted to make a break.
Yes.
And I think that kind of stood me well in as much as that. It was my decision to go, and I was going to do my best to make it work.
And the Juventus, such a great club with a great history, Liam. It was owned by the Agnelli family. They were the owner. Gianni Agnelli, who was allegedly a playboy, but they owned the Fiat Motor Company. They're very wealthy, but it was a huge club. I mean, the kind of aristocrats of Italian football. Would that be fair to say?
Yes, yeah. You know, Fiat probably became a huge company at the turn of the 20th century.
Yes.
And, you know, Agnelli wasn't the first of the big businessmen running Juventus. He came along probably well into their history. He probably came along in the 50s, whereas Juventus
yes.
have been going since 1920, 1930. And Agnelli came in and, you know, a big businessman, a big ego, and he wanted his team to be the best team round. And they signed John Charles from, in his time, they'd signed John Charles from Leeds United,
That's
I think,
right.
and they put him in partnership with a little Argentinian called Omar Sivori, who was an absolutely brilliant player, a bit like Messi, a bit like Maradona. So they're an unbelievable combination, those two. And they had great, great years then, but they couldn't win the European Cup, Eamon. It took them a long, long time to win the European Cup.
Right. And that was the Holy Grail.
That was the Holy Grail. They'd beaten in a few finals. And when they did win it, they won it in a game that nobody really wants to remember. It was the Heysel final in 85, and Platini got the winning goal. But it was, you know, it was overshadowed quite rightly by the tragedy that took place on that night.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Now, we remember Giovanni Trapattoni for a kind of, with mixed feelings, but there's no doubt that everyone in football respects his record and what he did. What was he like to play for when you went there first?
He was great. There wasn't a lot to be said between us because he didn't speak English and I didn't speak Italian.
Yeah.
So it was kind of instinct, you know. He just kind of told me where to operate, where he wanted to operate. But he didn't really. It was a bit like someone, you know, you hear the trainer of a racehorse saying, well, I don't tell the jockey what to do. He knows what to do best.
Yes.
I'm not going to tell him how to ride a horse. He's the jockey. It was a bit like that with me and Trapattoni. He just said, go out and play your game. You're playing a dance player in midfield. I played with Tardelli, all action, as you remember.
Yes.
And tough as well. Very, very hard tackler. And a little guy called Farino, who was like the holding man in midfield player.
Yeah.
Holding midfield player. And I had the freedom to go forward. And that's what he wanted me to do. But he was an extraordinary guy. I mean, if I can tell you a story.
Yeah.
We were trying to settle into our apartment. We wanted to get all stuff for the apartment. I love music, still do. And I wanted to get a really good stereo equipment. And Trapattoni said, oh, I know somebody in Milan. He knew the Sony dealer in Milan.
Yeah.
And he drove me to Milan. We went in. I selected my hi-fi equipment. I came back to the apartment and I said, I'll need to get somebody to fix it because I'm hopeless with these things to put it together, you know.
Yeah.
And he said, don't worry, I'll come round. And he came around the following day and he set up my hi-fi, and he was lying on the floor, you know, putting wires together, doing it and things like that. And that was the kind of man he was. I think he was wanting to help me, but he was also thinking, well, let this lad settle in well, and he'll be better for it. And Eamon, I know we've had our arguments, you know,
yes,
particularly when Trapp was coach of the Irish team. But when he had players who were really good forward players, he wasn't a defensive coach. He wasn't all about defenses.
When he got
Platini and Boniek in his team, I think that showed, you know.
Yes.
they were a marvelous partnership at Juventus.
Yeah, and you certainly paid him back. I mean, the Juventus won the two championships when you were there, you amazingly, you must have some bottle. The second of them was when you knew that because of the one player rule, Michel Platini was going to come and replace you as Juventus has permitted one foreign player. But
It was going to go to two, Eamon, but
yeah,
we'd already done the deal with Boniek, and I expected to play with Boniek. But right at the last knockings, probably about three games before the end, the decision was made to sign Platini, and I would have to make way. And we were in the running for the title with Fiorentina at that time. We were neck and neck.
And the last game, I should say that Boniek was a fantastic Polish player, wasn't he? Very good.
Oh, yeah, he was brilliant. Yeah, he was the best Polish player. You know, if you remember in that 82 World Cup,
yes,
Poland got to the semi-final, and it was probably on the back, mostly on the back of what Boniek did in that World Cup. So he was a great player as well.
He was, yeah.
But it came down to that. We won the third last game, then we won the penultimate game, then we went into the last game having to win
against Catanzaro. Who were they, Liam?
Catanzaro. Well, actually, Claudio Ranieri played for Catanzaro. There you go, Eamon. There's a
really?
Fact. You'll never know. They were a southern team, right down at the tip of Italy, and not a very nice place to go. Kind of put it? It was a bit like going to Bolton when Sam Allardyce was manager. Do you get it? You know,
I do get it. Yeah.
You knew you were going to get roughed up, and they were always good for a few surprise results, you know.
Yeah, and you had to win, did you?
We had to win. We were neck and neck with Fiorentina. We had to win. And incidentally, if Fiorentina had won that day, it would have gone to a playoff.
Oh wow!
Now, I've never heard of a playoff before in the league. Usually, it goes down to goal difference, but in Italy at that time, it was going to be a playoff. But we won, and Fiorentina only drew away to Cagliari, and we won the league by a point.
And you had to take a penalty. it was 0-0, I take it.
Yeah, it was 0-0.
And what stage of the game?
I think it was about 20 minutes to go, but after they told me that I wouldn't be staying at Juventus, that Platini was going in to take my place, my initial reaction was, oh, well, pick somebody else. I don't want to play, you know?
Yeah, right.
I got in, you know, threw my toys out of the pram.
Yeah.
But thinking about it, you know, I was never going to do that. So I did say to Trapattoni, though, I won't take penalties anymore. I don't want the pressure. And he said, okay. And we had a centre forward called Virdis, who went on to play really well for AC Milan in future years. But he was the designated penalty taker, but he'd been substituted when the penalty came around against Catanzaro.
Yeah.
And, nobody wanted to take it, to be quite honest.
It was a mass bottle job.
Italians are great when they're winning 3-0. They all want to take it, you know. But
yeah,
when it's 0-0 and there's something on it, yeah. That's why I never really fancy Italians when it comes to a penalty shootout.
Yeah, yeah.
And now I've been proved wrong. They have won them, yeah. But I took it anyway, and I scored, and we won the title, and at least I went away on a high note.
Absolutely, and I know from my own experience in Italy and talking to Italian people, it was never forgotten that you did step up. Did you feel a bit of heat, Liam?
No, because you're in the middle of the game, I mean, you're concentrating on the game. You know, you're not thinking of, you know. You know, it was only afterwards that kind of dawned on me what had gone on.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. Anyway, you went out on a high.
And I tell you what, the bonus for winning the league over there, Eamon, was pretty, pretty good. So I was never going to miss it.
Now, I want to ask you about the players that were in the league at that time. I mean, for Baresi, for example, a great, great defender. I mean, I was doing the research. He was only 22 when they won the World Cup. And he went on to have a very long and distinguished career. He was one of the great defenders. Maldini, another of the great defenders.
Yeah, you had those players. You had Baggio, who was an unbelievable player as well,
yeah.
Eamon.
Yeah,
a fantastic player.
Bettiger was, wasn't he, also?
Yeah, Bettiger, but Baggio was like 10 years after him. Yeah.
Right.
Like, what happened then is I went to Sampdoria in 82 after Juventus, and they signed Trevor Francis. So it was me and Trevor Francis at Sampdoria. Juventus had Platini and Boniek. Roma had Falcao and Cerezo. Fiorentina had Socrates and Passarella.
Yes.
Every team had like marquee kind of foreign players.
Yes.
And, put them with really good Italian players, you're gonna have success. Roma won the league in 83, and then they had really good players. Bruno Conti, above all. You remember Bruno Conti in the 82 World Cup?
Yeah.
And they had some. Falcao was a brilliant midfield player, Brazilian midfield player. And they won the league in 83. In 84, they got to the final of the Champions League or the European Cup, and they lost to Liverpool at home on penalties. You remember Grobler?
Yeah.
Kind of shaking his legs?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, that was kind of the start of Italian teams beginning to make inroads in winning the European Cup.
Yes.
And I think, that, as I say, the correlation with having good foreign players together with the Italian players made that possible. So Juventus won it in 85 with Boniek and Platini, and they were brilliant all the way up to the final. The final is forgettable for what we've talked about. But then that side, AC Milan, came along, Eamon.
Yes. Yeah. And
Rijkaard, Van Basten, and Hullet, 89, 90.
Yes.
Milan won it.
Yeah.
With the Italian players I talked about, you mentioned Maldini, Baresi,
yes,
Ancelotti, Donadoni, really great Italian players. And then 92, Sampdoria got to the final against Barcelona, and they had Mancini and Vialli as their strike force.
With Mancini, Liam.
Yeah, well, Mancini was bought by Sampdoria when I went there, and he was only 17 then, and he was a kid with the most potential in Italy. That's what he was nominated. He was nominated as the Golden Boy and went on to prove the people who bought him right. He was a tremendous player for Sampdoria. He won the league with them. Sampdoria, it's a bit like Leicester winning the league.
Yes. You know,
Sampdoria winning the league was an unbelievable feat. And then the following year, they got to the final of the European Cup and lost it a little bit unluckily to Barcelona. Lano and Coleman scored a free kick, but really this was the time now when the foreign players and the real good Italian players began to have this impact in the European Cup that, you know, every yes. year they were going to win it or they're going to go close to winning it.
It will be, I think, remembered as a sort of golden age in Italian football. When you went then to Inter. Subsequently, and I went to Inter
from Sampdoria. I played really well from Sampdoria, and Inter yeah. came and bought me, and I went and played with Karl-Heinz Rummenigge,
yeah.
Altobelli, Karl-Heinz Rummenigge,
Bergami,
Ferri, Zenga, the goalkeeper,
Baresi.
There was another Baresi. It was Franco Baresi's brother, Giuseppe Baresi. They were both really good footballers, but Baresi, the AC Milan, was the top man.
Right.
But his brother was very, very good as well. Calazio came and played for us. Marco Tardelli came and played for Inter Milan when I was there. So we weren't as successful as we should have been. But that was the time then that we began to be, it was real competition in Italy. Maradona
yes.
came, Zico came to Udinese,
yes.
Socrates came to Fiorentina, Passarella was at Fiorentina, Souness came and played.
Yeah, for Sampdoria?
Yeah. You know, that was the time I think that Italian football began to take off. And then when they opened it up, and in the late 82, another foreign player,
yeah.
Well, then they were in business because, as we said, Milan, that team for Sacchi with Hullet, Van Basten and Rijkaard was something else.
It really was, yeah. Just to talk about Maradona for a moment, you actually alerted me to the fact that the Channel 4 documentary was on a couple of weeks ago. It was very, very intriguing. Of course, it all ended tragically, really. He got involved with cocaine and the mafia and a very, very sad ending to his time at Napoli. But there was spectacular success as well. And there's a wonderful photograph of you as captain of, I'm not sure if it was Inter or
Ascoli,
where you ended your career.
Yeah.
And you're exchanging the banners in the centre circle before the match with Maradona. Tell me what impression he made on the Italian game, Liam, as a footballer and as insofar as you could judge it as a man.
Well, never got to know him as a guy. There was a big distance between Milan and Naples.
Yes.
But, he was a party guy. Everybody knew that. He was either in the papers for what he'd done on the pitch or in the papers for what he was doing off the pitch. He was something else, I mean, you know, and he was a great lad on the pitch. If I could compare him to somebody in modern-day football, you compare him to Messi.
Yes.
He never rolled around on the ground. He never really dived and things like that. Obviously, if someone hit him in the box, he would go down and he'd get his penalty. But he wasn't really a prima donna by any means. He was a good lad on the pitch. He played the game fair. Well, that's not quite right after what he did in the 86 World Cup. But, you know, I think he chanced his arm there,
yeah.
if you excuse the pun, and got away with it. But on the pitch, he was really... really difficult to play against because he couldn't knock him off the ball. He was so strong. He had that low center of gravity, really strong legs, and he could just twist and turn anyway, Eamon. And of course,
yeah.
if he got up around the box, he was just a genius. Where we saw some of the goals in that documentary. He could bend the ball with the inside of his foot or with the outside of his foot. He could lob the goalkeeper free kicks. If he got a free kick, anything from 20 to 25 yards, you were in trouble.
Yes.
really, really great player. And like Naples had won, I think, one league in their history and never looked like, you know, being title contenders till they brought him to the club. And what the president of Naples did is he not only brought Maradona, but they brought some other really good players as well. And Maradona led them to two league championships.
Yes.
The year I left Italy, 87, they won it. And then they won it again in 89. And I think there was a European, might have been a UEFA Cup or a Cup Winners' Cup. Maybe a UEFA Cup they won with
him
as well.
I think they did, yes.
And on top of that, Eamon, he won the World Cup in 86, probably on his own, you know.
Yes. And just to, I mean, there's always this debate. I don't like it, and you probably don't like it either. Pelé last week or a couple of weeks ago came out and said, I was the best, Maradona was the next, and then Messi. I don't like that kind of talk because great players are great players, and I'm sure you agree with that.
Well, if you put me on the spot and said who was the best player I ever played against, I would have said it was Maradona. But I played against some great players, and I played against them, you know, a lot of them in Italy, Eamon. Michel Platini was some player. 83, 84, 85 in Italy for a kind of a, what we'd say is an inside forward in our day. He wasn't really an out-and-out midfield player. He wasn't an out-and-out centre forward. He was that in between. But he scored, in those 3 years, 83, 84, 85, he was the Italian league's top goal scorer. And he was in around the 20 mark. And that was 30 games then, Eamon. So 18 goals in 30 games, 20 goals in 30 games. Like to give you an indication, Ian Rush came to Juventus the year after Platini retired, and Ian Rush scored 8 goals in 28 games.
And Ian Rush was a great goal scorer.
Platini, he was a great goal scorer.
Yes.
But it was difficult to score goals in Italy, and for Platini to do what he did, and I think demonstrates how brilliant a player he was.
And that was exactly the time, Liam, when I was saying that he wasn't a great player, he was only a good player.
Well, I remember. I think it was the 88 Euros, wasn't it?
No, France, it was before that. It was the 84 Euros or 86.
No, I beg your pardon. You're absolutely right. It was the 84 Euros in France.
What a great
88 was us. 88 was us in Stuttgart, wasn't it?
Yeah.
With Big Jack. Yeah. But it was in France. And I remember watching you on RTE, and you were giving him plenty of stick. And I think he scored 9 goals in 6 games, and France won the Euros.
He did, yeah. He scored a hat trick, I think, in the semi final. And I said to Bill before the match, he's going to be found out today, Bill. He's going to be found out.
Well, when you're a pundit, you have to stick your neck out, Eamon, and you've stuck it out plenty of times.
Anyway, it's been delightful. I just want to ask you a final question, Liam, about Rummenigge, who is still a very important figure at Bayern Munich and in the German game, and a very, by all signs, a very intelligent man. You played with him at Inter Milan. And all of the people, that whole experience for you, it's given you a sort of an insight into a culture and developed you as a person and enriched your life and indeed Sarah's as well. It was a great thing to do.
I've absolutely no regrets. I probably regret going to Ascoli. It wasn't what it promised to be, and I was quite unhappy there. But the other 6 years, 6 seasons I had in Italy, it was absolutely brilliant. And we talked about some of the players that were playing there. I played with some great players as well. And Rummenigge was up there. If someone says to me, I mean, who's the best player you played against? I would say Maradona. And who's the best player you played with? I'd have to say Rummenigge, because he was one of those centre forwards that he could get the ball and do it all on his own, Eamon.
Yeah.
And he was a great lad as well. We were roommates.
Right.
And we had a smashing time together. We were kind of neighbours where we lived as well, so we socialised quite a bit. It was a great time. It really was a great time.
Well, we're very, very grateful to you, Liam. for reliving it with us and with our listeners. You made a massive contribution to, I think, your own reputation and reputation of English and Irish footballers. By the way, you conducted yourself there. It was a glorious time for football and for you. And we're very...
Well, Eamon, when you want to speak to me, I'm here and I look like I'm going to be locked down for another few weeks. So you're very welcome. And I just want to say to all our listeners, just be safe and be careful.
And the same to you, Liam. We're very grateful to Liam, one of our greatest sportsmen in any discipline. That particular 7 years he spent in Italy did an enormous amount of good for the reputation of Irish people. I would like to thank all of you for listening to our podcast.
That's all we have time for now. We'll talk to you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you're concerned about mental health or looking to get into self-improvement, join me at the Piece by Piece podcast. There, I'm interviewing everyday people and experts alike about how to overcome difficulties around mental health. Speaking of which, I just released an interview with a mental health historian and another with two friends who are healthcare workers.
If these conversations interest you, check us out at Piece by Piece. That's Piece with an A, B-I, and then Piece with an I. Thank you so much.